Chapter 3. Memory in the Sword. The farmhouse stood 10 miles from Harkonnmere, out along the main road that headed west and over a pass, before turning off onto a narrow lane that wound northwards, all the way up a little inhabited valley. The Burtons' farmhouse was right at the very end. It lay beyond the oak-fringed lake, amid the last fields, before they finally surrendered to the mountain wilderness. Jake had caught a bus that went as far as the final hamlet. From there, he had to walk another mile to reach home. By the time he stepped from the bus, the snow had stopped and left in its wake a silence so striking that it stilled the mind, and Jake's had been very busy. His chief preoccupation had been Frost. The meeting had been so strange that it had pushed aside graver matters, not to mention the casual way in which Frost had spoken of death. What did he mean by types of death, which were far more interesting than physical ones? Pondered Jake, as his footsteps crunched through the snow. He mentioned an initiation. For what? Though he tried to dismiss it all, he couldn't. Aside from the raven and the appearance of the bats, there was something about Frost that was too intriguing. He had challenged Jake's view of the world. His granddad Nesta, who lived in one of the farm outhouses, constantly did the same. But Nesta, fascinating and great fun though he was, never forced his views. Frost, however, had spoken with such magnificent authority that he had appeared like a giant. As Jake reflected on their meeting, he realized it had nourished a part of him that had been neglected, albeit with a strange aftertaste. Jake glanced up at the moon. It was full, gracing the valley and mountaintops in a silver so serene that it stole his attention even from Frost and held it until he arrived at the farmhouse. He stood at the end of the drive and beheld the familiar sight so dear to his heart, the raw nature, the old drystone buildings, the stillness, the fierce weather whenever it came, he loved it all. It was a place of memories, and though he had no memory of his mother, he had grown up knowing her as the wind in the trees, the swaying grass, birdsong, and the play of sun in crystalline pools, and everything else that was beautiful in nature, for that's how his dad had described her. A gentle breeze blew about Jake. He inhaled deeply, imagining her love filling his lungs. But who, he wondered, would replace his dad? He let it go. He was too tired for such heavy thought. Instead, he simply dwelt on his dad's image. The newspaper had been incorrect in labelling him just an Egyptologist. He had worked on ruins all over the world. It was the reason Jake had seen so little of him while growing up. But when his dad had been back, his presence had filled the house like lamplight in a cave. Jake's attention returned to the house. The only light shone from the kitchen. Bill's probably at his second home, propping up the bar, assumed Jake, referring to the farm manager and the Tiger's Tail pub in town. Mad or not, the thought of him brought a glimmer of warmth to Jake's heart, for Bill was like an uncle, and if ever Jake needed him, he had always been there. An owl hooted from the copse of ancient trees beside the house. In the half-light cast by the moon, the trees looked twice their usual size. So too did the colossal boulders in the fields. Apart from the occasional bleat from the hillsides and stirrings from the cowshed, the farm appeared deserted. Even Nestor's outhouse was locked up, which was strange given the circumstances. Perhaps Grandad went to Egypt to collect Dad's body. But why hasn't he called? Though keen to see him, Jake was relieved to have the house to himself. It had been a long and strange day, and there was something fitting about entering the house alone. A raven cawed from the great cedar tree, interrupting Jake's musings and reminding him of Frost. It was swiftly followed by a gust that shunted him forward. Obeying its command, Jake made for the kitchen door, just as 3 bats shot out from the trees and flew in circles about the house. Frost's warning of an initiation returned to his thoughts. so also did the image of a wolf, and a shiver ran up his spine. Once inside, Jake felt a strong pull towards his dad's study. He resisted it, not yet ready to enter such an emotionally charged place. Tomorrow, he thought. A wave of tiredness swept through him. Without wondering why it had hit him so suddenly, he headed straight for bed and fell into a deep sleep. After his first encounter with the inkwell, when it appeared again, Jake felt fear, even though he knew he was dreaming. Yet he had to know what the ghost had meant about dying, so he flipped open its lid before he hesitated. Once again, he was hauled through the ominous portal. This time, there was no sign of the ghost. Jake stood before giant pyramids silvered by the moon. His attention was drawn towards a great sphinx close by and a temple beside it. He only had to think of being inside of it, and he was there. On top of the altar lay a sword. Exquisitely made and obviously ancient, it had about it an air of power, like a sword carried by a king. Am I supposed to hold it? He wondered, both excited yet wary. Yes, said an ethereal-sounding female voice from inside his head that he accepted without alarm. Yes, hold the sword. It's important. What was it Dad once said about swords in stories? Thought Jake. That what they really represent is opening one up to truth, cutting away false ideas. Swords aren't about killing, but the truth can feel like death if we don't want to face it. He remembered something else his dad had said, quoting a Sufi mystic named Rumi. Die before you die. Die as many times as you can in one lifetime, to old beliefs and customs which no longer serve you, so that you may become who you truly are. Is that what the ghost was going to say? He wondered excitedly, bracing himself for blinding flashes of light and a rush of power. Jake clutched the sword's hilt. But nothing happened, not immediately. Rather than power, he felt something else flow from the sword. Emotion. Something between sadness and shame, and the temple's insides became an earth-walled chamber that Jake instinctively knew lay beneath the Sphinx. It was an image from the recent past. The sword was revealing a memory. Jake jumped when he saw the white wolf, though it appeared unthreatening. It sat on its haunches, watching on as part of the wall transformed into a great swirling mass of darkness. It reminded Jake of the inkwell, except this gateway felt sinister and somehow wrong.
Look at you! How pathetic! Spat a voice as deep as thunder. A tall man dressed in black stepped in front of Jake and radiated such power that he appeared like a god. He was holding a samurai sword, except that he wasn't samurai. With long dark hair tied back in a single tress, he looked more like a Viking mixed with a Greek, for he was swarthy and ruggedly handsome with piercing blue eyes. Emotion surged through the sword in Jake's hand. Sadness and shame were swept aside by anger, exhaustion, and excruciating pain. He gasped. On his knees, Jake was living the memory. Deep gashes covered his body. He was aware of speaking, though couldn't hear the words, as though something were blocking them.
Your time is over, Tusk, continued the man. The time for all humans is over.
The man glanced over his shoulder at the vortex of the gate.
Destiny awaits. I would wish you farewell, but that would be pointless.
With lightning speed, he swung his blade. Adrenaline surged through Jake, but before the blade struck him, a colossal force tore through the memory and cut it short. Jake was no longer in the chamber, but at the entrance to a cave. Disorientated, his heart racing, Jake peered inside. If the man with the sword had seemed godlike, then the character Jake was studying was in a different league altogether. Dressed in a dark cloak with the hood up, he sat in a cave in front of a fire, smoking a pipe. All Jake could see of his face was a bushy grey moustache and the rich brown of his skin. It clearly wasn't the ghost. Combined with his hawk-like features, he reminded Jake of Arabian nomads he had once seen in a documentary. He looked peaceful, yet his presence electrified the air. When he inhaled, the atmosphere grew light. When he exhaled, it grew so heavy that it felt to Jake that the world might implode, as though the man's every breath determined the fate of the universe. "This cave," thought Jake as he studied it. "It's in the mountains above the farmhouse." A gust blew into the cave and shunted Jake forward. Taking it as a sign, he stepped from the shadows into the cave. As quick as a hawk, the stranger glanced up from the flames and fixed on Jake. His eyes were a dazzling green. They widened as though in recognition or shock, perhaps both, and shone with terrifying wisdom. Jake grew dizzy. He feared that were he to gaze into the eyes for more than a moment, they would swallow him whole. Only then did Jake notice that coiled about the neck of the stranger was a cobra. It reared up and hissed venomously. It was swiftly followed by a shriek and a great flapping of wings. Out of nowhere, a mighty eagle flew at Jake and planted its talons against his chest. Its surprising bulk knocked him off balance. Jake glanced backwards. Where moments before had been solid ground was now a hole. It was deep, so deep that it passed through worlds. He had but an instant to flail his arms about in panic and to try and wake, but neither worked. The stranger smiled, and Jake plunged.